Gopijanabalabhagirivaradhari 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 Yashoda Nandana Bhajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Bhajajana Ranjana Bhajajana Jamuna Tira Vanachadi Tira Vanachadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Balabhagiri Haradhari Gopi Jana Balabhagiri Haradhari Gopi Jana Balabhagiri Haradhari Gopi Jana Balabhagiri Haradhari Yashoda Nandana Bhajajana Ranjana Nanda Bhajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Bhajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Bhajajana Ranjana Yamuna Chadi Yamanatiravanachadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Madhava Kunjabi Hari
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivijagacharya Astatara Satasi Srimad Divine Grace Isi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Ki Gopimanandi. Okay, I'm going to address the youngest girl in the room here. What's your name?
Anya,
that's easy. So, you know who is Krishna, right?
Yeah.
What's your favorite pastime of Krishna?
Probably the one when Krishna put the whole entire mountain up on his pinky.
Yeah.
Pinky finger and the whole entire mountain was on his.
Okay. What's that Leela called? You know, it starts with a G. Govardhan. Govardhan Leela. Alright? Govardhan Leela. So, That's much later in Srimad Bhagavatam, because Krishna was 7 years old. But when Krishna was not even 3 years old, he performed a pastime which we've been reading about, where he showed twice to Mother Jasoda inside his mouth was the whole universe. Yeah, that's what we're reading. So just yesterday evening, we heard about all of what she saw, the this and that and the other thing and the other thing and the other. She saw everything. And she saw that everything inside Krishna's mouth included her looking inside Krishna's mouth inside Krishna's mouth. Ha! Nanda Maharaj was there too. It's pretty amazing. At the same time the universe was outside, the same time the universe is inside. And now, this evening we're going to hear, she's holding her head going, what's this? So that's our topic for this evening. So the text is Canto 8, Canto 10, Chapter 8. Those of you that like to look up the verse in your celebrated handheld device. 10:840. So she's considering it might be any one of four things. And one of the things is swapna. What does swapna mean?
Dream.
Exactly. Maybe this is a dream. Then the second thing is Deva Maya. Deva, we know what the Devas are, demigods. And Maya, it's a trick of the demigods, an illusory display of the demigods. What's an example of an illusory display of the demigods? It's not exactly Krishna's Yoga Maya, but a display of the demigods. Can you think of one? I'll give you an example from Mahabharata. When the Pandavas depart this world, they're taken to heaven, but Indra uses his Deva Maya to show them what looks like hell. And it describes this and that and the other thing and the other thing. It's screaming and dark and fierce and... But it's just Deva Maya. It's Indra's potency to make something that isn't look like what it, or is, yeah, is not what it looks like. Or it looks like something that it isn't, or something like that. Deva Maya. So she thinks maybe that's what it is, Deva Maya. And then the third is Bodhi Moha. Bodhi, we know what that means. Intelligence. Moha, we know what that means. Life in material world. Moha, bewildered. So it's an illusion. Delusion. And then the third is Atma Yoga or Autpatika Atma Yoga. It's Krishna's mystic power or the Lord's mystic power. Excuse me. She's thinking maybe it's the Lord's mystic power because during the name-giving ceremony of Krishna, where Gargamuni spoke about who Krishna is, Gargamuni said, this is, you know, in his first few weeks of life, he has powers of Narayan. So maybe this is one of those, one of Narayan's powers that Gargamuni said that Krishna would have. He just has some special powers. Not that he's God, but he has powers of God. given to him by Narayan. So, Swapna, maybe it's a dream. Devamaya, maybe it's the demigods doing some illusory trick. Maybe it's manifestation of my, you know, I'm mentally deranged. Or maybe it's some mystic power. So here's the translation. Prabhupada's writing. Mother Yashoda began to argue within herself. Is this a dream or is it an illusory creation by the external energy? Has this been manifested by my own intelligence or is it some mystic power of my child? Prabhupada's purport. When Mother Yashoda saw this wonderful manifestation within the mouth of her child, she began to argue within herself whether it was a dream. Then she considered, I'm not dreaming because my eyes are open. I'm actually seeing what is happening. I'm not sleeping, nor am I dreaming. Then, so she rules that one out. Then maybe this is an illusion created by Devamaya. But that is also not possible. What business would the demigods have of showing such things to me? I'm an insignificant woman with no connection with the demigods. Why should they take the trouble to put me into Devamaya? So that's also not possible. Then Mother Yashoda considered whether the vision might be due to bewilderment. Quote, I'm fit in health, I'm not diseased. Why should there be any bewilderment? It is not possible that my brain is deranged, since I am ordinary, quite fit to think. So that's three down, one to go. Then this vision must be due to some mystic power of my son, as predicted by Gargamuni. Unquote. Then she finally concluded that the vision was due to her son's activities and nothing else. And here comes some commentaries. This is, the final one is going to be very involved. The initial ones are pretty simple. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, Yashoda began to argue about the reason for her vision. Quote, was it a dream? No. Because my eyes are not filled with the contaminants of sleep. Was it some illusion created by the devas? Why should the devas delude an insignificant person like me? Was it some mental derangement? No, because my mind is stable now. Or is it some inconceivable power, Atma Yoga, of my son, since Gargamuni said he would have qualities like Narayana? Pretty straightforward. Then, next is a reference to Canto 2, Chapter 3, Text Number 30, 2730, where, in Canto 1, Chapter 3, there is a little summary description of avatars as they appear in this world. There's a similar list that appears in Canto 2, Chapter 7, so it's in that list, where he's speaking about Krishna. And here's what Shukadev says about Krishna. Here's the translation. Yashoda took up rope to bind him, but the rope was not sufficient to tie him. She also saw in his gaping mouth the universe, and then with a worried mind, she recovered her affection for him as her son. And so, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on that verse, 2730. Mother Yashoda took a rope to tie him up, but it was not big enough to tie him. Yashoda, later seeing all the world in his mouth, was first astonished. Was this a dream or some illusion of the devatas? referring to this verse for this evening. She then understood that her child had great powers. Has this been a manifestation of my own intelligence, or is it some mystic power exhibited by my child? Did Krishna do this? Then after that she recovered. She realized the sweetness of her affection for her child, which counteracted her realization of his powers. She had previously thought, he is Narayana, let him destroy my materialistic affection for him, seeing him as my child. Since later in that chapter, she writes or says, I pay my respects to his lotus feet. So that's the words of someone who's honoring the omnipotence or the majesty, the mightiness of God, the opulence of God. So she recovered and went back to just being Mother Yasoda, the sweetness. Jiva Goswami writes in his Bhagavat Sandarbha, do you need a little background on who is Jiva Goswami and what is Bhagavat Sandarbha?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. Do you know who is Lord Chaitanya, of course?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So Lord Chaitanya had many, many great devotee associates. And chief amongst the many, many were the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Right? You're familiar. So one of those six, Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami was an age younger than Rupa and Sanatan. In fact, he was their nephew. There was a third brother. Rupa and Sanatan were brothers, right? They had a third brother who died, but before he died, there was a son. His name was Jiva. So Jiva was one of the six Goswamis. And he wrote three different commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam.
Wow.
So one of those commentaries was like Prabhupada's, which was every verse, every verse, every verse commentary. Then he wrote another one, expanded just on Canto 10, Srimad Bhagavatam. And then a third one, which was topic by topic. That's called the Sandarbhas. And one of the topics in the Sandarbhas is Bhagavat Sandarbha, where Bhagavat Sandarbha is describing the specific position of the person as opposed to Paramatma or Bhagavan feature of the Supreme. Haven't lost you yet, right? Okay, okay. In Bhagavat Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami is going, yay, Bhagavan. And he's explaining the features and the nature and the particular aspects of Bhagavan. And he's speaking about this verse in Bhagavat Sandarbha. And he quotes, quote, by your mercy, this is Mother Yashoda, by your mercy you showed the whole universe within your body, giving visual proof. This is a fact. Excuse me. This is Lord Brahma. This is Brahma stole the calves and cowherd boys and put them in a cave. You know that pastime?
Yeah.
Okay. So Brahma now offers prayers to Krishna. That's chapter 14. Brahma's praying. By your mercy, you showed the whole universe within your body to Mother Yashoda, giving visual proof. That is a fact. The meaning is repeated in order to remove other ideas about the Lord while emphasizing the truth of this incident. So here's the verse. Just as this entire universe, including you, was exhibited within your abdomen, so it is now manifested here externally within you. How could such things happen unless arranged by your maya? So, to Mother Yashoda, he showed the universe inside. to Brahma, he showed everything outside. Right? The calves and the cowherd boys became Narayan forms, and each of the Narayan forms, all their opulences, and then the whole universe. While they're in the universe, inside and outside and all around. And that's, he's, Brahma's confirming, this is possible only by your Maya potency, your illusory potency. Paragraph. Just as the whole universe exists within you in your belly, the universe exists outside also in you. The meaning is this. By showing himself in Braja, and at the same time showing that Braja was within him, he showed that he was inside and outside Braja. His mother thought that this was perhaps a dream. In quotes this evening's verse. She doubted it was a dream or Devata's Maya consisting of an original and a false form. She concluded it was some power of her son. She thought as follows, quote, announcing, I am the all-pervading, even in this particular medium-sized human body, by the inconceivable Swarup Shakti, you have shown your special quality of having simultaneously both features, that is, her son and the Lord of everything, both features, inside the mouth of Krishna was that. And then here is her son, saying, I didn't swallow dirt. This was her conclusion. Then he makes reference to this same 2.7.30 verse where Shukadeva Goswami is describing the Damodar Leela and the Yashoda Leela, showing the universal form. Just as the universe is within your belly and outside here also, you are within the universe and spread over the universe as well. How can this happen except by Maya, a Shakti, which covers the truth? It is not possible otherwise. So now comes a really long one. And this is also from Bhagavad Sandarbha, where the same two verses from Brahma's prayers to Krishna are talked about. And he specifically goes into this, the word Maya and Yoga Maya and back and forth. So in Brahma's prayers to Krishna, chapter 14 of Canto 10, he addresses Krishna as the controller of Maya. And the phrase is Maya Damana, like Kaliya Damana, the subduer of Kaliya. Maya Damana. Brahma said, O Lord, by your mercy, you have revealed that the entire cosmic manifestation is situated within you. In order to establish the truth of this statement, as well as to refute any other contrary argument, Brahma spoke the next verse, text 17. My dear Lord, the whole cosmic manifestation that we are visualizing at present is all within your body, yet I am seeing you outside, and you are also seeing me outside. How can such thing happen without being influenced by your inconceivable potency? Just as Sri Krishna is situated within Brajabhumi, in the same way, because Krishna is all-pervading, Brajabhumi is situated within him. In this way, the statement of Srimad Bhagavatam, that Krishna is within the cosmic manifestation, and the cosmic manifestation is also within him, is confirmed. So Braja is in and out, and the cosmic manifestation is inside and outside, everything, because he's the source of everything, it's in him. And he manifests it outside of himself through different potencies. When Mother Yashoda saw Sri Krishna before her with the entire cosmos within his mouth, she was able to directly perceive these two truths about Krishna. At the same time, she tried to understand what she had just seen. And she said, is this a dream? Or an illusory creation of the external energy? Has it been manifested by my own intelligence, or is it some mystic power? Brahma explains in this connection, quote, O Lord, although by the power of your inconceivable potency you appear to occupy a limited space within the land of Braja, you are nevertheless all-pervading. You directly showed these two truths about yourself to your mother, Yashoda. This statement of this verse by Lord Brahma is also confirmed in the following explanation. This Canto 2, Chapter 7, Text 30, verse. It's expanded its translation. When a cowherd woman, that's Mother Yashoda, Krishna's foster mother, was trying to tie the hands of her son with ropes, she found the rope to be always insufficient in length. And she finally gave up. Lord Krishna, by and by, opened his mouth, wherein the mother found all the universes situated. One reason why the rope wouldn't go around, because what rope is big enough to go around the universe? Seeing this, she was doubtful in her mind, but she was convinced in a different manner of the mystic nature of her son. Unquote. This is confirmed by the words, quote, My dear Lord Krishna, the whole cosmic manifestation that we're visualizing at present is all within your body. That's Brahma speaking. Although the cosmic manifestation is situated within you, you are still all-pervading within it. Everything is present within you. And now comes the final one. This is, again, Jiva Goswami, and the last of the six Sandarbhas is Preeti Sandarbha. Do you know anybody by the name Preeti? I'm asking your daughter. Preeti is a very common girl's name. Preeti. Yeah. Preeti means love. And we know in ISKCON, Prabhupada would often use the word prema. Jiva Goswami liked the word Preeti. So the last Sandarbha is Preeti Sandarbha. So he's going to describe some topics about bhavas or ecstasies that make up prema or preeti that Mother Yashoda has. That's the topic. Seeing a display of Lord Krishna's extraordinary power, a devotee in vatsalya rasa or parental affection may think the power came not from Krishna but some other source. An example of this is seen in the following words spoken by Lord Krishna's parents, Canto 10, Chapter 7. This is Trinavarta, the whirlwind demon. They said, It is most astonishing that although this innocent child was taken away by the Rakshasa to be eaten, he has returned without having been killed or even injured. Because this demon was envious, cruel, and sinful. He has been killed for his own sinful activities. This is the law of nature. An innocent devotee is always protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A sinful person is always vanquished for his sinful life. So he was protected by Narayan. Lord Krishna's parents thought in this way. Lord Krishna's mother spoke in the same way. In Srimad Bhagavatam, our verse, 10:8:40. So, these four things. How did this happen? After seeing Lord Krishna manifest the entire material universe within his abdomen, Mother Yashoda could not believe this was the son. This was a display of her son's great power. She assumed that he had no power to manifest this vision. She assumed that the vision of the universal form was caused by the personality of Godhead, who is different from her son. Narayan invested powers in Krishna, and here's one of those powers. It's Narayan's powers. It's just a little boy, my son. Do you have powers? No, okay. Playful powers. She thought in Srimad Bhagavatam, the next verse after this text 40, therefore let me surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, meaning Narayan, because that was the worshipful deity of Nanda and Yashoda, Narayan. So let me surrender to him and offer my obeisances unto him who is beyond the conception of human speculation, the mind, activities, words, and arguments, who is the original cause of this cosmic manifestation, by whom the entire cosmos is maintained, and by whom we can conceive of its existence. Let me simply offer my obeisances, for he is beyond my contemplation, speculation, and meditation. He is beyond my material activities. Here, Mother Yashoda assumes that this vision of the universal form was caused by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is different from her son. To become free from seeing this fearful vision, she takes shelter of the Supreme Lord's feet. She thought, quote, next verse, it is by the influence of the Supreme Lord's Maya that I am wrongly thinking that Nanda Maharaj is my husband, that Krishna is my son, and because I am the queen of Nanda Maharaj, all the wealth of cows and calves are my possessions, and all the cowherd men and their wives are my subjects. Actually, I am eternally subordinate to the Supreme Lord. He is my ultimate shelter. She's a devotee of Narayan. With these words, Mother Yashoda firmly takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, speaking the words, quote, Nanda Maharaj is my husband and Krishna is my son. She refers to Lord Krishna, who is then before her eyes. She then says, I'm bewildered, ku matihi, by these many manifestations of the universal form, yan mayaya. Then she says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the goal of my life. Then Shukadeva Goswami starts to speak and explain her words. Next text. Mother Yashoda, by the grace of the Lord, could understand the real truth. But then again, the Supreme Master, by the influence of the internal potency Yogamaya, inspired her to become absorbed in intense maternal affection for her son. Here the word tattva refers to her son. Her words, sa Ishwaraha, refer to Lord Krishna's feature as the Supreme Controller. Earlier, Yashoda said, let me simply offer my obeisances, for he is beyond my contemplation. Then, it is explained, next verse, or all the way to text 45, from text 40 is where we started. The glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are studied through the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literature of Sankhya Yoga and other Vaishnava literature, yet Mother Yashoda considered the Supreme Person her ordinary child. And then from an earlier, no, later chapter, chapter 9 of Canto 10, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, the son of Mother Yashoda, is accessible to devotees engaged in spontaneous loving service. But he is not as easily accessible to mental speculators, to those striving for self-realization by severe austerities and penances, or to those who consider the body the same as the self. Then next, this is the same commentary. This is Jiva Goswami explaining Mother Jasoda saw. He goes to Nanda Maharaj when Uddhava comes to visit Vrindavan. So you're familiar with that one? Wow, good for you. Krishna had left Vrindavan, went to Mathura, stayed in Mathura for a while. Krishna was appreciating, he was feeling separation from the residents of Vrindavan. But he knew, because he's the Supreme Lord, he knows, if he shows affection to the resident of Vrindavan, the remaining demons will go attack the resident of Vrindavan. No, he didn't want that. So he didn't go. But he was feeling separation. He knew what they were feeling too, because he's in their heart. So he sent Uddhava. So Uddhava went to Vrindavan. And they're having, first he went to the home of Yashoda and Nanda to offer respect to king of the cowherds. So here's Nanda speaking to Uddhava. Does Krishna remember us? Does he remember his mother and his friends and well-wishers? Does he remember the cowherds and their village of Braja, of which he is the master? Does he remember the cows, the Vrindavan forest, and Govardhan Hill? Will Govinda return even once to see his family? If he ever does, we may then glance upon his beautiful face with its beautiful eyes, nose, and smile. After Nanda spoke these words, Uddhava, following the ways of this world, to console him, spoke next. Oh, respectful Nanda, certainly you and Mother Yashoda are the most praiseworthy persons in the entire world, since you have developed such a loving attitude toward Lord Narayan, the master of all living beings. He's directly saying he's not just your son, he's Narayan. Even as Uddhava spoke these words of praise, Nanda remained convinced that Krishna was his son and not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He could not be moved from that idea. Then, while Krishna's messenger continued speaking with Nanda, the night ended. The women of the cowherd village rose from bed and, lighting lamps, worshipped their household deities. Then they began churning yogurt into butter. In this way, Uddhava spoke many words to console Nanda Maharaj, who was grieving in separation from Krishna. No matter what Uddhava said, Nanda remained always convinced that Krishna was his son and not the Personality of Godhead. The truth of Uddhava's words, that Krishna is indeed the original form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is elaborately explained in Krishna Sandarbha, but this is Priti Sandarbha. Even at Kurukshetra, Krishna went, and the residents of Vrindavan went to Kurukshetra. The residents of Dwaraka and the residents of Vrindavan met up in Kurukshetra at the time of a solar eclipse. It's at the end of Canto 10, Chapter 82. Even at Kurukshetra, when a great host of saintly devotees affirmed, Lord Krishna is indeed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nanda and Yashoda remained unconvinced. They continued to believe that Krishna was only their son. Here's the verse. Quote, raising their two sons onto their laps and holding them in their arms, Nanda and saintly Mother Yashoda forgot their sorrow. and Kurukshetra. And he's like, with pomp and majesty and, you know, not cowherd dress. He's dressed like a king. They can't see that. Now back to Uddhava's visit, chapter 47. Nanda says, may our thoughts always take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. May our words always chant his names. May our bodies always bow down to him and serve him. Interesting. Even though the truth that Sri Krishna is the all-pervading, all-powerful Supreme Person was again and again proved to him, Nanda Maharaj continued to believe Krishna was only a son and nothing more. These words spoken to Uddhava mean, quote, we pray that birth after birth we may love Krishna. This prayer of love spoken by Nanda is filled with anurag love. Love is not absent from them. And it goes on. As Uddhava was about to leave, Nanda and the others approached him, bearing various items of worship. With tears in their eyes, they addressed him as follows. And we're going to hear what he says. In these verses, it is seen that Nanda and Yashoda are filled with anurag, ecstatic love for the Lord Krishna. Their devotion to the Lord is not in the mood of awe and veneration, the mood of appreciating Lord Krishna's supreme power and opulence. Here, Uddhava thinks, although I am far from attaining this kind of good fortune, I still pray that someday I will attain this kind of ecstatic love. I pray this love will not be denied to me. With a voice choked with emotion, Uddhava prays in that way, praying that some other lifetime he may someday attain this kind of anurag, ecstatic love. Uddhava says, wherever we are made to wander about this world by the Supreme Lord's will, in accordance to the reactions of our fruitive work, may our good works and charity always grant us love for Lord Krishna. This particular verse may be interpreted in two ways. It may be interpreted to refer to Vatsalya Rasa alone, or it may also be interpreted to refer to other rasas also. Here the phrase beginning the word Pada, or taking shelter of Krishna's feet, is considered inappropriate in Vatsalya Rasa because Nanda Maharaj feels great anguish because he cannot associate with Krishna who's gone to a faraway country. Not so far away. Mathura is not so far away from Braja. A similar situation in Karuna Rasa. Karuna Rasa is seen in the story of Maharaj Chitraketu. What was that? He was lamenting in great lamentation, oh, my son is gone. The fatherly affection for his son that had left his body. Similar. Different, but similar. Here the word pravana means bowing down. In Srimad Bhagavatam, the word, that's next verse, text 67, the word Ishware is used as an affectionate term to address a child. It is sometimes used that in that way in this world. Now, Ishvara means controller, and Ishware is vocative of Ishvara, and sometimes affectionate person parents address their little child affectionately in those terms. These are included in Udbhasvaras. Now the sattvika bhavas will be considered. This is a little esoteric. Of these, there are eight. It's Rupa Goswami, nectar devotion, sattvika bhavas. But Mother Yashoda has a ninth one, that is milk flowing from her breast when she sees Krishna. So it's bodily transformations, that's sattvika bhavas. Then sanchari bhavas will next be considered. There are those, first, born from the pastime of Krishna directly, and two, born from the pastimes of power and opulence, manifest with the aid of Lord Krishna's pastime potency. The first of these is seen in the words of Srimad Bhagavatam in this chapter, chapter 8. Dear Krishna, this is the pastime potency being manifest. Why are you so restless that you have eaten dirt in a solitary place? This complaint has been lodged against you by all your playmates, including your elder brother Balaram. How is this? This is an example of Lord Krishna's restlessness. The second of these sanchari bhavas, that is, his power and opulence manifest along with his pastimes, is seen in this verse, the next one. When Krishna opened his mouth wide by the order of Mother Yashoda, she saw within his mouth, and it described what she saw. So that's the second category of sanchari bhava. In this passage is seen Mother Yashoda's wonder and doubt. Here the stayi bhava is vatsalya rasa. So it's a little technical. That's the end of our evening's reading. Stayi bhava means steady ecstasy. Stayi bhava. And it's of different types. That's the primary rasas are stayi bhavas. So hers is parental. And in the parental affection, it was stimulated by amazement at seeing Krishna's opulence as Aishwarya manifest, but as it was stimulated, it then reverted back to just her motherly affection, the sweetness feature of Krishna. And so these are our acharyas relishing the topic. It's kind of like, you know, a lady in the kitchen that's learning how to cook different things. You add this spice and it tastes like this, and you cook it that way and it tastes like that. And I was just today is Mother Jamuna's May 19th, her birthday. And I was just reading a story of something that Jamuna told to a devotee about Prabhupada. And his taste was so refined. So Jamuna told this devotee a story. She was somewhere. I forget where the somewhere was. I can pull it up and read it if it's very nice. She was somewhere. And she found this place that had some really special wheat. She knew the name of this very special wheat. So she bought some. She personally ground the wheat. And she took the wheat and made flour. And then with the flour, she made certain preparation. And, you know, she was anticipating offering it to Prabhupada. She brought it to him hot. Prabhupada looked at it, broke off a corner, chewed it slowly. As he was chewing, he identified the particular type of wheat and said, it would taste better if you left it on the flame for another 2 minutes. And she was stunned. So, you know, he wasn't a sense gratifier. That wasn't what was going on. He just had refined taste. And this devotee was saying, when having meals, she, you know, like you two, she grew up in a devotee family. In UK, Janavi, you know Janavi, the singer, Janavi. She's like now she's, you know, a young woman. But when she was associating with Jamuna, she was in Gurukula, and then was a teenager, and so Jamuna would visit because her husband Kripamoya was a celebrated Vaishnava, and so she was just being affectionate to a young girl, and then now a teenager. And she was describing the experience of being with Mother Jamuna. Well, I'm going to read it. It's really nice. Is that all right?
Yes, yes,
yes. I thought you'd say be all right. Okay. Some of my most treasured times with Jamuna were when we were honoring prasadam together. Eating with her was a spiritual and a sensory experience from another realm. She would simultaneously make food completely welcome and comfortable. So she would simultaneously make everyone feel completely welcome and comfortable while effortlessly entertaining each person and bringing them to her level of focus on the act of receiving Krishna's grace through prasad. In Gurukul, I grew up singing the prasad prayers before every meal. We were children and didn't understand the sing-song Bengali poetry that we're galloping through twice daily. Eventually, as an adult, I fell out of the practice, resorting to a quick mental thanksgiving. From the very first time I ate with Jamuna, my perspective on the act of eating changed totally. There was no pinpointing where her meditation began, no dividing line between daily activities and, quote, meditation. It flowed on from long before her morning sadhana, to prayerfully cooking in the kitchen, to sitting at the table for lunch, a continuous state of gratitude and devotion. Sometimes she would begin by grasping for the hands of the other guests and fold hers and place her elbows on the table. She would close her eyes and begin to softly sing the prayer with her resonant voice, sometimes low, sometimes rich, sometimes rising with deep feelings. I don't think I ever heard her sing it the same way twice. There was no rote, no rushing. It was truly a song of love. Beyond knowing it intellectually, I began to understand from my heart what honoring prasad meant. She would eat slowly, sometimes commenting on different aspects of the dishes. Often she would question her fellow diners, asking pointed questions about spicing, textures, and quality. "What do you taste?" she would ask, smiling enigmatically as I tried to guess the ingredients. Sometimes she would ask my opinion on what I thought could improve, and I would try to honestly answer, though I feel like a fool to report my unrefined perceptions. After some time, I began to appreciate how she was training us with this questioning. I could see how to perceive and discern between different qualities in prasad was not so different between noticing and discerning between similar variables in hearing shastra, kirtan, or anything perceived by spiritual senses. She would prove this point by visibly relishing Srimad Bhagavatam, kirtan, as if she was tasting a delicious dessert. Eyes closed, she would turn her face very slowly left and right, and either fell silent or exclaimed with gusto, "Nectar!" or "Krishna!" Though I didn't relish in the same way, I knew that as an exceptional cook, she had extremely refined taste. Seeing that this level of taste existed helped me to understand that through the process of bhakti yoga, I too could refine my senses and appreciate, quote, all things Krishna in a similar way. In my favorite mealtime moments, she would verbalize this point, often telling a beautifully detailed story about Srila Prabhupada and his level of sensory refinement. And that's the story where his comment was, "Very good, but they could even taste better if you left them on the tawa for just 2 seconds longer, not 2 minutes." She was amazed at his level of sense perception, etc. Though the quality and presentation of the meal were usually enough to make me fall into an awed silence, we had the most enlivening and deep conversations in those moments. I would curse my poor memory as I sat with sticky hands unable to write anything down, as she recalled countless pastimes and instructions with amazing stories from her life. After prasad, she would often talk on, slowly picking every last crumb from her plate as she spoke. Often when she spoke of Srila Prabhupada, tears would glide down her cheeks, but she rarely seemed to even notice. She was not self-conscious. In that moment, she was deeply connecting with her guru through memory. Sometimes she would share historic information that surprised and even shocked me. With frankness, humor, and honesty, she recounted the obstacles and extreme trials that she faced in the early days of ISKCON as a woman. One afternoon, she shared a great deal of her earliest times in Vrindavan as the first Western woman to live there. As a 19-year-old, I was riveted at her description of how she used to bathe in the freezing Jamuna in a pitch-black morning, or sometimes have to use a pit that was meant for mixing concrete for the Krishna Balaram temple's construction. With her gestures, gaze, and voice, she would paint the scene so vividly that I almost felt the memory was my own. No matter what the difficulty she described, she was never with bitterness or contempt. Although she had a mercurial wit and a wry sense of humor, she always spoke in terms of what she had learned and tried to unpack that realization for me to absorb it also. Even people who had undermined or hurt her greatly were spoken of with careful kindness and reserve. Mealtimes would usually end with her laughing protestations as Dinatarani tried to make her go and rest. She always wanted to stay and discuss more and use the time to question and hear from me about my life since we last met. There was no time inappropriate for careful listening or deep reflection. That's Mother Jamuna. So let's see if we're back to our, you know, Mother Yashoda looking inside Krishna's mouth and wondering what's going on. And the different bhavas that she, as a mother, was experiencing transcendental ecstasies. So any discussion? If there's anything in the room, we'll do that first, and then if there's something online, we'll do that, and then we're done. A little abrupt ending, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Maharaj, in that glorification of Mother Yamuna, I felt that she was so much attached to Srila Prabhupada.
Oh.
And isn't that one qualification more than enough to go back to Godhead?
Yes.
So.
Well, with it comes other forms of purity, of course, because some persons, anyway, yes, with that qualifier. With other forms of purification, yes. She had refinement of character, not just taste and so forth.
A little appreciation or continuation of what Prabhu was saying. It seemed like, I'm reading Leelamrita too, like, it seems like the progress in Krishna consciousness is dependent on the level of austerity that we are ready to take. Like Mother Jamuna was, you know, taking cold shower, doing so much for Prabhupada, like in the evening, the Leelamrita, in the early days, all that has been done has somehow been the strength for Prabhupada disciples that I see that even after 40 years or 50 years, they're still continuing the movement. And when I look inside, I feel I'm not doing any austerity. I'm just comfortable in my house and I'm just thinking, what's my hope?
We're all different. And, you know, times are different. So it doesn't have to look the same or even similar. The principle that's important is the one that already mentioned. And, you know, whatever it is that I do, it's done with that dedication. She had certain gifts. You know, music was one and cooking was another, and she used them, but she not just used them, her level of devotion with which she offered everything, it was expressed very beautifully. It wasn't like, okay, now it's time for meditation. Her life was like that. So your life can be like that. It doesn't have to be, you know, the likeness of at 19, you know, taking a bath in the dead of night in the cold of the winter in Vrindavan, which is like, that's extreme, in the dark. But, so it doesn't have to look like that. But whatever it is that you do with the mindfulness of, it's for Krishna. And then you can, you know, the spiritual progress can be the same. The powerfulness of that example can be the same. It's just the way that the place that it's applied is different. She wasn't like many of the early devotees became celebrated because of their preaching. she wasn't like a celebrity in the preaching field. She was just a celebrity in her singing and her cooking and, you know, her being Jamuna. So there, you can consider, if you, you know, what are ways in which I, given my family situation, can accept some inconvenience for myself in order to further the mission of our founder Acharya. You know, whatever that might look like, you can start to do some of those things. But, you know, it's not just the doing things that are more than what you're now doing. That's nice too, but it's the consciousness with which those things are done. That's the superlative factor. And doing things that are outside of our comfort zone, that's what austerity, that's what tapa is. You have something? Online question.
Question from Ramasharana Prabhu. Does people of that time, meaning I think Dwapara Yuga, believe that Narayana Vishnu is supreme fountainhead of all incarnations, including Krishna?
Well, during that Dwapara Yuga, people believed all kinds of things. And some of the people believed, you know, they didn't so much also think of Krishna. They didn't think of Krishna as anything other than he is the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda. They didn't have that conception that we have commonly.
This is a question from Prakash Narayan. I am trying to comprehend what Mother Yashoda saw inside the Lord's mouth. What does it mean to see natural instinct and the reactions of karma, and to see desires and different varieties of bodies moving and non-moving, and planetary systems, water, light, air, sky, and creation by transformation of ahankara?
Well, what is answered in the commentary that we read yesterday? And the commentary says those things that are not visible with our present sensory perception or sensory power were manifested as the devatas of those entities. And it is understood when you see the devata of those entities, the entities are also present. The presiding deities of something, the something is there. Like seeing the sun god, you see effulgence. You see sunshine, like that. You see Chandra, you see the moonlight, because he's the god of the moon, like that. That's what the explanation is given. It's not easy to understand, but that's the explanation that's given. In a similar fashion, when Brahma saw what he saw, when he went to, you know, in Canto 2, Chapter 9, he saw Lord Vishnu, and surrounding Vishnu were all those entities. So how do you see those entities? They're personified forms of those entities. That's what he saw. So that's what Mother Jasoda saw.
I have one question.
Yeah.
There is one more question. In the discussion where you were saying about Uddhava, how he was expressing to Mother Yashoda Nanda Maharaj that, you know, one day, you know, I should, you know, get this kind of love for Krishna. But Uddhava was in a very high, state of devotion.
Yeah.
Because he was with Krishna. But he saw that Mother Yashoda, the Vrajavasis were much more advanced.
Yeah, he saw that.
And you know, I was thinking that I am here with, you know, the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Mai Ashakta Manav Partha, you know, start from hearing about Krishna, start from chanting to get some Ashakti, you know, attachment to Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes and says, this Hare Krishna mantra will take you to that, you know, stage. It's all too much for me to think that, you know, how is it possible to attain a higher state with this?
Well, it's so, two. It's effort and mercy. You're doing the effort part, and the mercy part is you're hoping that mercy will be bestowed, and it's the combination of the two. And part of what we're doing just this evening, hearing about these elevated persons, is part of the mercy. The effort and mercy, all at once. And that's how. It's mind-boggling, but that's how. Mercy is very powerful. And the exercise of bhakti, when it's with the intention of pleasing Krishna, is very powerful. We need lots of spiritual potency to get beyond our present position. It's not just about being religious, it's about becoming transcendentalists.
Continue with faith.
Yeah. Effort and mercy.
This is from Barsana Mataji. 5-year-old Govinda is asking if chanting is necessary to go to Goloka. He says he likes kirtan and dancing. What do I tell him to encourage him without pressurizing him?
Well, the encouragement should go to the principle of bhakti. So when you like dancing and kirtan. So there's dancing and there's kirtan, and then there's for the pleasure of Krishna dancing, and there's pleasure of Krishna kirtan. So focus on the for pleasure of Krishna part. So, where there's interest, fan the spark. And when the spark grows, say, you know, supposing it's not good musicians. Are you going to be as interested? So what makes the difference between the good musicians and not good musicians? What's really important in pleasing Krishna is the devotion with which, and same thing with the kirtan, it's not just the musicality of it, it's the name. That's what's pleasing to Krishna. So slowly, slowly, by encouraging that which there is attraction for, strengthen, nurture the bhakti principle, and then the it's the name that's pleasing to Krishna, it's not the musicality. Or it's not the way, the technique in which you dance. It's the dancing for Krishna part that's attracting Krishna, that's pleasing Krishna. That's the greater happiness. So what's pleasing Krishna is not just music, but his name. It's not back door. It's just one thing leads to the next thing, leads to the next thing. But, you know, it's gradual. And it's not uncommon for young people to like kirtan and not like japa. It's not uncommon. Because there's likable things with kirtan that has to do with the musicality and the social interaction and, you know, the camaraderie and showing off what you can do and things like that.
Japa is one-on-one with Krishna.
Yeah.
And Krishna is invisible.
Well, it's the mind that's in between. There's you, there's Krishna's name, and then there's the mind. It's pretty raw.
Two more questions. Yeah. From Giri Vatikota. Please enlighten us. why Nanda Maharaj is not ready to accept Krishna as Lord, even though it is convinced by Uddhava, who is the devotee of the Lord?
Well, the answer is, he has a certain bhava. He has a certain mood of love. And it's so strong and so rich and so thick. He just smiles on the outside and smiles on the inside because he just loves Krishna as his son. That's why it's so strong. Madhurya eclipses Aishwarya. The sweetness eclipses the opulence feature. Uddhava doesn't have it. Nanda has it. Uddhava's thinking, wow, when would I become like that?
This question from Sridevi Mataji. When Lord Krishna showed universal form in different instances, it looks like Lord wanted to show who he really is. In Yashoda Mata's instance, what was his mood?
His mood was he wanted to enhance a secondary rasa of astonishment. And it worked. And it strengthened and heightened her parental affection. Anything?
Yes, Maharaj. About the Ananda Maharaj's mood. Sometimes during the discussions in Bhakti Vrikshas, this question asked that my mother or my sister, she thinks that she has this love for Krishna, and at that time, if she has, like, if she's going through, some period of time where she cannot serve Krishna, and you know, she feels that she has to do it no matter what. And, you know, and even if she's not, you know, taken a shower or, you know, she's in that mood where she wants to serve him. But we cannot obviously see that and, you know, say that as that's the bhav, or, you know, that's not, we cannot compare it with Nanda Maharaj's bhav, for example. But, you know, how do we differentiate between, you know, people who are close to us having that bhav, or, you know, and at the same time, we have this, in the scriptures, there are personalities who have this bhav. I was kind of like not able to convince her that, you know, we should follow sadhana and we should give importance to sadhana as sadhakas. And, you know, this, the bhava or the prema stage will come naturally later. So...
I'm familiar with what you're speaking about. It's not like totally common, but I'm familiar with it. And I'm pausing because I know there's examples in real life where persons actually are on that position, on that platform. And it's really rare because when the most part, you know, 90-something percent, 99%, it's not on that, really on that platform, and but it's the sentiment is so strong, you know, surely Krishna is accepting the sentiment, but at the same time, ignoring regulation isn't really what's pleasing to Krishna. So then, you know, to encourage the, what to do is your question, to encourage the person, this is what Scripture says, and we try to follow what Scripture says, and for example, this example of this point of cleanliness. Cleanliness is so important. But, you know, if it, what to do when somebody just doesn't want to hear it because they're already got their sentiment is so absorbed in whatever it is that they, their sentiment is absorbed in, they really can't hear anything. So it really, you know, I guess pray for them and show good example. And then they have, so there's something between that person and Krishna, and that, you know, pray to Krishna, please help this person come to a standard where, to a position where they can hear what is pleasing to you. In other words, so if Guru Sadhu Shastra is not the guideline of what's pleasing to Krishna, then it's this, the mind. And my mind is the determining factor of what's pleasing. And, you know, I wouldn't accept Guru Sadhu Shastra. And that's not Krishna's program. Krishna's program is through his devotees, not through the mind, without reference to his devotees. So you pray to Krishna for that person and continue to be a good example.
Question from Rama Raghav Prabhu. When we listen to such glorious interactions between spiritual master and disciple, it is very tempting to imitate or pretend similarly. What is a more natural way to deal with such sentiments?
Is he speaking Jamuna? Not this other. Just, you know, with your jaw hanging open, just like, wow. She is a real thing. And then you read about her and remember her, and, you know, you imbibe the quality just from inspiration. That's my answer. What do you think? You agree? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai.